is a special report.
Knowing how to invest your money is harder than ever before. Dealing with stock market volatility, record debt, and terrorist attacks requires new thinking. At U.S. Asset Management, we can help you see the world more clearly so that you can move beyond the chaos and invest with confidence. Call us, visit us online, or drop by our office. U.S. Asset Management, helping you make better decisions with your money.
Your government doesn't care about you. That's why you need a medical emergency kit. It contains life-saving medications like ivermectin, Z-Pak, and antibiotics. Stock them before they block them.
Hi, everybody. I'm Christine Dolan, and this is our Globalists in Plain Sight show. And today we are very honored to have with us Nicole Suratek, who is a nurse here in the United States. And we have heard from doctors. We've heard from people who have been who've been victims of medical tyranny with the medical boards here in the United States and abroad. And we've talked about what's happening at the WHO, but we haven't had too many nurses on camera other than those who have been COVID vax injured in the past. But Nicole, welcome. First of all, welcome to the show. And we really do appreciate you being with us.
Oh, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So Nicole, tell us about your experience when COVID first broke in 2020. What did you see among the nurses?
Okay, so I was one of the original nurses that went to NYC to manage the pandemic when it first came to the United States. So we remember, guys, we were in the first 30 days of the pandemic hitting New York. And I was with the first wave of nurses that went to help in New York. And it became very clear very early on that, if you guys all remember, they're saying they needed nurses, they needed nurses, they needed nurses. But it was very clear that they didn't know what type of nurse they needed. And we thought we were all like interchangeable, like a nurse is a nurse and any nurse can manage a ventilator. Just like,
not so.
Mm-hmm. Not so. It's just like, you know, an aircraft mechanic can't work on a Peterbilt diesel truck. It's just not understanding. Both mechanics, but very different. So when we got there, it was very clear that the wrong nurses had been brought to the epicenter and nobody knew how to manage ventilators. And they kept calling respiratory therapy. And there was maybe one respiratory therapist for 300-400 patients. And I'm like, no, you have to manage your own ventilator. And they're like, we don't know how to do this. We don't know the meds. We don't know the care bundles or care protocols that go with being on a ventilator. And because of this extreme breakdown, that people just started dying.
Let me ask you something. Do you want to share the name of the hospital? Or you want to leave that out?
I was at Lincoln Memorial and the Metropolitan in NYC.
So was this a managerial decision? Was this the nursing director's decision? I mean,
honestly, I would love to know who decided that, because the hospital management and the nursing management within the hospital should have known better. So it had to have come from some type of panic response and breakdown in public health like protocols, because every state actually has to have a protocol in place for the next influenza-like pandemic. It's part of the pandemic response that existed long before the time of COVID and existed as part of standard public health. So as to why they had no concept of what type of nurse they needed was beyond me from a manager.
Okay. All right. So go on with your story. I just wanted to just include that to give it some context for everybody. Okay. So what did you say?
So it was very clear that they didn't know the medications to sedate and paralyze patients on the ventilators, that they didn't know ventilator settings, that they didn't know care bundles when it comes to ventilators. So when you're on a ventilator, you're 100% dependent upon your nurse or your respiratory therapist or the people that provide care for you. So are we feeding these people? On the news, we heard we wanted 30,000 ventilators, but did anyone ask for 30,000 feeding pumps?
Oh, no. My God.
Did they ask for 30,000 sequential compression devices? Now, if you've ever been in the hospital post-surgery, it's those little things that they Velcro onto your legs and it squeezes and release and prevents you from getting any sleep. Did they ask for 30,000 of those to prevent blood clots in your legs? No, they did not. And so because nurses.
So let me just ask. I'm sorry for interrupting, but I just want.
Mind-blowing, isn't it?
Well, it is. It's shocking. Okay. It's shocking because if you're on a ventilator, you're motionless except for, I mean, you're not sitting up in bed. You're not walking to the bathroom. You're not walking down the hall of it. So this is a disease that allegedly was causing blood clots, yet they're putting you on ventilators. They're not putting you on blood thinners and they're not giving you the preventive things for your body so that you can have the blood go through the body. Am I understanding that correctly?
Yeah, because if you don't get those SCDs, sequential compression devices, the alternative is Lovenox injections every 12 hours into your belly. If you've ever had a knee replacement or a hip replacement, you'll probably remember getting those injections while you were in the hospital. It's to prevent DVTs, deep vein thrombosis in your legs. And if you're on a ventilator, and it's very common practice, you don't even need to have had a surgery to be on the ventilator. You could be there for sepsis. You could be there for traumatic brain injury, multiple other reasons why you could be on a ventilator. We are trained to either have those sequential compression devices on you or to do Lovenox therapy injections every 12 hours. That I never saw Lovenox at all while I was in NYC. And then they're surprised that people were throwing blood clots. And we told them, I'm like, hey, we think they're throwing clots, but they're not throwing them in their legs as well. It's other type of microclotting that's going on, you know, with the Wuhan strain that originally came through in 2020. And they told us we were crazy, that respiratory viruses don't cause clots. And I'm like, either way, they need to be on Lovenox. And nobody listened.
Wow. So you witnessed this, and I take it that other nurses did as well. And when you brought this to the attention of the administrators at the hospital, what was their response?
Well, first we bring it to the doctor's attention, and it became clear that we had the wrong type of doctors because I was working.
Oh, my God.
The story just keeps getting worse and worse and worse. So first thing you do is you bring it to the attention of the doctor. Hey, you know, this is what we need. This is what's supposed to be going on. And we had the wrong type of doctors. I had GI doctors work managing ICUs for a respiratory pandemic. I had gynecologists. I had ophthalmologists. And I'm like, you guys are the wrong doctors. So once again, protocol breakdown. And so then when you would bring it on to the rounding nurse, the administrative nurse in charge, here's an example. I had an old pump in these hospitals, just archaic equipment. And I'm like, hey, I mathematically counted that I should not be running through fentanyl as fast as I'm running through fentanyl on this patient. I'm like, it's going through 3 times faster than it's supposed to based off what is programmed right here. I calculated out the micro drops and everything. And I'm like, so we're actually overdosing these patients and running through fentanyl way too fast. And she's
I have a question about this. And maybe it's because I've been lucky with good health, but I didn't know until this error that fentanyl was actually given into the hospitals. And I keep on hearing the administration of fentanyl during COVID. What was that all about?
So fentanyl is a medication that we use for sedation while you're on a ventilator. There's multiple different sedative protocols that can be used. I'm typically used to propofol, but you can only use propofol for so long before you end up with what's called propofol syndrome. And so for long-term management, you'll typically go on to fentanyl. So it's common based off some theories of thought when it comes to sedation, but it's not the only sedation protocol available. But in NYC, they were almost exclusively using Presidex and fentanyl.
Wow. All right. So when you brought it to the doctor's attentions and told them that they were the, you know, they were the wrong doctors and the protocol wasn't working and you didn't have enough feeding tubes and things like that, what was the reaction?
They had no clue. They had no clue. And then I spoke with another doctor. I can't remember her name right now. This is after the fact. And apparently NYC imports all their residents from foreign countries. So the standards of cares in, let's say, like Qatar are different than the standards of care here in the United States. Not to mention we had completely different doctors. A GI doctor is going to function differently than a pulmonology doctor or even an intensivist. So it was like when you try, like when we were in a code and I'm like, hey guys, we need to get on, like, it's 30 to 2, 30 compressions, 2 breaths of air. And, you know, we're going to monitor the end tidal to see if we end up with ROSC, which is, you know, spontaneous recirculation. You know, the heart comes back. And they didn't understand the concept of running a code either. And there was just such a gap in between the quality of care between what they were taught in med school and then what our expectations are here in the United States. And so when you try and go above their head and you try to talk to management, management is just like, just do your job. Just do what the doctor says. I'm like, the doctor doesn't know what we're supposed to be doing. And I'm telling you, this is what we're supposed to be doing because I am a flight nurse and we sedate people all the time and we intubate people all the time out in the field. In some of the worst conditions, upside down in a car, filling with water. You know, I mean, this is what I mean.
Let's talk about that, Nicole. I think it's important for people to, again, in the context of this interview, for people to understand your background, because you've been at, you know, humanitarian disasters. You've been in the war zone. So give a flavor for that for our audience, because that's how you were able to see what was absent from the healthcare in New York, obviously.
Yeah, so my background is actually critical care, trauma, and flight, and I also do humanitarian work in hot zones. So as a flight nurse, we're trained to be either in a fixed wing or a rotor, which is a plane, or a helicopter. And when you're in the helicopter, you actually fly to trauma scenes. So if you've ever seen the helicopter land when there's a car accident or something like that, that's what we do. And we intubate on site. We do all sorts of EMS, like emergency medical response, like paramedic type work out in the field. So it was very bizarre to me that, you know, after the pandemic, I got labeled as some, like, as a nurse that couldn't hack it. I was, they called me a hick from the sticks.
Oh, and my gosh.
That's not true, because I'm expertly trained in intubation, in ventilator management. I've done numerous disaster responses from Haiti to the Houston, Texas response when we had Hurricane Harvey. I've done Syria and Afghanistan for the refugee camps. And I'm like, what are you telling me that I didn't know what I was doing? I'm like, I live by the motto, like, you practice until you can't get it wrong. Mm-hmm. And to be told that I didn't know what I was talking about when this is what I literally got paid to do, you know, when you trust us with your life, like the helicopter lands, we're supposed to save your life. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I better know what I'm supposed to do in just about every single situation. And it was just bizarre that nobody, they came there and they thought that there was going to be someone managing their ventilators for them. And I'm like, no, darling, it's you. It's you. Mm-hmm. So I'm running around managing everyone's ventilators when I have my own 2 patients on ventilators. People didn't know how to manage chest tubes. People didn't know what to do when a lung collapsed. I'm like, you need to needle decompress it. And they're like, how do we do that? And I'm like, holy crap, we are in a lot of trouble here. You don't know the basics of what to do.
How many weeks were you in New York?
I was in New York for 4 weeks. So 30 days. So a month. Mm-hmm.
And so when you went to the doctors and they said that they didn't know, did you go up the chain of command?
Yeah. So I would find their attending, and the attending was on the same page with what I was saying. And so he would dictate stuff to the residents, but then the residents could follow orders that were dictated by the attending, but they couldn't critically think for the next patient on what to do because they didn't know standards of care. So it's like, you know, I can do a lot of things that are dictated to me that, like, you can dictate to me how to manage a dialysis machine. If you're standing there and you're dictating me and telling to me step by step by step what to do, I can absolutely do it. If you walk away and tell me to do it for the next patient, I will not be able to do it. And so that was kind of like the breakdown with it. And I'm like, docs, you either have to trust me and listen to what I'm telling you, or you need to get the hell out of my way and let me take care of this patient. So it was just chaos upon chaos upon chaos of inappropriately trained staff and inappropriately utilized resources.
Did you leave on your own accord, or did you just cause so much, so many questions? Because I know that when my parents, near the end of their life, when I was the caretaker in the family, you know, and dealt with the hospitals and everything, I was not pleasant to work with because I asked too many questions. But that's one of the things that just hit me very strongly in 2020 and 2021 when the family advocates were not allowed in the hospital. I thought that was pretty. I don't know. I didn't know what to make of that, because I always think that everybody should have their own advocate in the hospital.
But it's a pandemic. It's a novel virus. We don't know if you'll get sick or not. Stop the spread. But yeah. The whole not having family there is like a contentious topic for me, because we had so many ADA patients in the hospital across the country. Those that were
downstairs. What's an ADA?
American with Disabilities Act. So Down syndrome, mentally disabled, severely mentally or physically handicapped. There was a situation with a patient in Florida named Franca, and she was a 47-year-old Down syndrome patient, and mm-hmm. she was a verbal. She needed like lots of assistance to perform her ADLs or her activities of daily living, such as feeding herself, getting herself dressed, brushing her teeth. Mm-hmm. That, and they put her into the hospital when she had COVID, and they said that she consented to everything and she verbalized her understanding to all teaching. And I'm like, how verbalize her understanding documented medically as being a verbal?
Oh wow.
It was wow. And we saw this across the country. These patients were just vented, and you know, the boxcars to the concentration camps ultimately for the disabled.
When you left New York, where else did you go?
So after I left New York, I went back home to my home state of Nevada, because I was not a nurse in New York, and I wasn't one of those travel nurses that traveled around from location to location. I went there to go help serve my country, because I was a nurse that can manage ventilators, and we were all just sheltering in place. So I'm like, let me go help and do some good, because my disease specialty originally was tuberculosis, so I'm used to dealing with infectious diseases. So I went back to Nevada and had to pick up my life after that, because there was a video that I put out that went around the world that says that they're killing these patients. Nobody cares. They're giving them these medications that are killing them. And so that, I think, woke a lot of people up, because what was happening in the hospitals was not what was being reported on the news to everybody. The backlash happened. I was a crisis actor. I was working for the CIA. I was trying to take down Trump. I'm like, what? Started to dig into me, and I'm like, yeah, you found everything about my humanitarian work and all my training and credentials. I'm like, I'm literally just a nurse. Nurses help people. That's what we're supposed to do. So when I came back from New York, I just had to kind of pick that up. I got blacklisted from employment, and, you know, it was really hard to find a job, and everyone in the medical field pretty much turned against me because I was a crisis actor. So I started a nonprofit that was called American Frontline Nurses, and we're still active today. And our specialty is patient advocacy, patient outreach, using nursing knowledge to help those people. We have lots of great programs and services and things like that. We're a 501c3 nonprofit, and 100% of money donated goes back 100% out to programs and helping people. We're 100% volunteer managed and functioned nonprofit. And so that's what I've been doing, is just, we've been helping people through the pandemic. And then now that the pandemic is over and it's just the flu now, We've been helping people pick up the pieces of their lives and countering misinformation that's going on out there in the world about healthcare and things like that. So that's what we're doing now.
Are you working with long COVID patients as well as people who are COVID vaccinated injured?
You know, we are. We send a lot of people who are vaccine injured to REACT 19, and we deal with a lot of the long haulers because my thesis for my nurse practitioner program for my master's degree was actually in treating long COVID using nutraceutical supplements that were easier to get because it's like a novel thing. A lot of people still have foggy brain. A lot of people have chronic inflammatory processes, assuming that they're not vaccine injured. If they're not vaccine injured, never got the vaccine, and it's just long haulers. Mm-hmm. But we work a lot with those folks. We're not seeing the success in the clinical setting with a lot of these long hauler protocols that people are using. People aren't getting better with them. And I'm like, we just really need to stop the interleukin 6 production in the body and calm the storm in the body. It takes a lot longer to take care of things when you use the natural way, but we're able to, you know, through diet, nutrition training, physical activity, and holistic wellness, get a lot of people better.
Functional. They're functional. So, mm-hmm. How do you feel as somebody who's in the medical field, okay, and has done emergencies? What do you have any thoughts on the fact that the FDA has not officially recognized the vascular and the neurological injuries?
You know, honestly, I think it has to do with some type of, there's got to be some bigger game at this because they should have. Well, first of all, the FDA has no legal authority to pull a drug from the market. They can politely request it, but the pharmaceutical company has to willfully bring the drug out, like off the market. Mm-hmm. The FDA has no legal authority to do that. And I think that to recall a vaccine would be, from the traditional standpoint of all vaccines are safe, would be detrimental to the business model.
But again, if they know through the paperwork that the neurological and vascular, as we now know from the Pfizer papers,
bad for the business model.
Well, it's a bad business model that's resulting in a lot of injuries because they're not being acknowledged. Did you see a lot of neurological and within the realm of people who are vax injured? Did you see a lot of vascular and neurological injuries?
We did. We saw the clots happening very soon on, and then we saw neurodegenerative disorders. So it was like Guillain-Barré syndrome was happening. Mm-hmm. Strokes were happening. Clots to the arms and to the legs, microclotting to the eyes, and strokes were really big, very right on.
And when the doctors, if you can see it as a nurse, and the doctors claim that it's not connected to the vaccination, what were the conversations like behind the scenes with the doctors when somebody did, if you saw a patient that had vascular or neurological injuries and the doctor didn't see it, what were those conversations like?
You know, honestly, it was like it was either a don't ask, don't tell, or just complete denial. But it was really funny because I responded to an emergency while we were in flight. We were traveling to go do some teaching and training. So I was on a commercial airline and they did the announcement, hey, is there any medical personnel? We have a medical emergency. And it was this very fit 50 some odd year old woman who was in the bathroom. You can totally tell she was having a cardiac event. She was gray, ashen, sweaty. And I, you know, when the stewardess brought me to where she was at, you know, I told her, hey, I'm a flight nurse. Like, this is what I do. Get me your med bag. Get me everything you've got. And I asked her, I'm like, first thing I do is I look at her. And the fact that she has biceps, like, bigger than mine. And I, you know, bench press and stuff like that. And she's got six-pack abs. I'm like, you are fit, lady. Like, this mm-hmm. is not like a traditional cardiac event. And the first thing I ask her is, how many COVID vaccines do you have? And she's like, I got two. And I'm like, how long ago was your last one? And she's like, about a month ago. And I'm like, okay. And then I have her chew on some aspirin that they had, and I put her on oxygen. And I'm taking her blood pressure and her heart rate. I've got next to nothing but for like a, like I can barely catch a pulse. I have no blood pressure. So the pilot, you know, starts cranking through and we get priority landing. So we're there 30 minutes before we're supposed to. EMS arrives and EMS looks at me. So I'm looking at the paramedic and I'm like, you know, she's times two COVID vaccine. He's like, ah, yes, of course. That's exactly what he said. Ah, yes, of course. Mm-hmm. And then they hurry her out. So we all know, but nobody will say anything, because if you publicly say something, you know, this is in 2021, mm-hmm. you know, the end of 2021. And, you know, if you say anything negative about the vaccine, even if you were injured, you could have gone anaphylactic, you know, when you got your injection, you would be called an anti-vaxxer. And nobody questions safety and efficacy of a vaccine at this time. If you do,
all right. Black. All right. And so, Nicole, we're going to take a pause here to do a commercial. And okay. coming out of that, let's get back and talk about what happened to you behind the scenes and what you found out through your own experience of being doxxed and attacked.
Sounds good.
It's going to be a good day. This Monday, we do have a little bit left available here. Check us out, familyfarmbeefbox.com. Thanks. Have a good day.
If you haven't noticed, gold has reached a new high, all-time highs, actually, and keeps going up every day. Why is that? It's because precious metals are a long-time historical store of value. And if you own a portfolio and you have assets in the fiat currencies, i.e. stocks, bonds, cash, or whatever, you're vulnerable to hyperinflation, which is coming as our debt explodes another trillion every 90 days. It's really scary. So how do you protect yourself? Go to Advisor Metals. If you look on any of our CDM.press sites, about halfway down, there's an ad for Advisor Metals. Click on it, fill out the form for your contact info, and Igor Bashatsky will contact you and talk to you. It's an easy conversation. There's no sales pitch. He's completely verified by us. He has a regulatory background we've checked into. We've checked with his bankers. We've checked with his IRA custodians for metals. And we can highly recommend Advisor Metals and ERA. So go to Advisor Metals. If you call them directly, tell them we sent you at CDM, and he'll definitely take care of you. But protect your portfolio, because you really need to. It's coming. Thank you.
Okay, we're back with Nicole Sorotic. And let's first time I had seen you publicly was when you were at one of Senator Ron Johnson's round tables, and you spoke up about the nurses, and then you were really attacked after that. So let's talk about, you know, before we get into who these people are, let's just talk about the storm, because you know what you spoke about at Ron Johnson's round table was just your observations as a nurse and coming forward. How did you get to that table?
You know, it was really happenstance that I got to the Senate. So we were there for Defeat the Mandates. And then we were invited by the FLCC doctors to speak at the Senate the next day. And so that's how we got there. And, you know, I was given an opportunity to sit at the table with the doctors and tell them, tell Senator Ron Johnson about what was going on. And this is going on. This was the second time I had a video that went around the world. Mm-hmm. Because I talked about how remdesivir was killing people. And that was the primary COVID treatment for in-hospital patients. Right. And that the vaccine was killing people. And that we literally flew a 10-year-old boy out for a heart attack. I'm like, 10-year-olds don't have heart attacks. And you can totally see it on the EKG, which once again, I am trained to read as a flight nurse. And so that video went around the world. People woke up about remdesivir. They started to wake up about the COVID vaccine. But that got me on the radar of an organization called Team Halo. And Team Halo is a United Nations verified initiative to combat, quote unquote, misinformation. And Team Halo is an organization of trusted messengers that are either scientists, doctors, nurses, people like that, that were giving preferential treatment on TikTok. So their videos would get blasted everywhere on TikTok. And they would combat misinformation. And I was one of the targets for two of their nurses named That Sassy NP or Tyler Cuck from Washington State and Jess 2019, who goes by Joseph, whose real name is Josephine Kratt. And she's from Michigan. She's a nurse. They're both nurses. And they went on TikTok telling everybody that I was an anti-vaxxer, that we're telling people to take vet meds because there was such a backlash about ivermectin. And they just sent all of these crazy people after me. And then by de facto, my children, that it became.
Well, let's back up. Let's put this into some, Nicole, hold on for a second. Let's put this into some context. What was the date of the round table that you were at in Ron Johnson's?
I want to say it was January 22nd, 2022.
Okay. So then after you spoke out, then you started being attacked on TikTok and you're called crazy. You're called dangerous. You're called anti-vaxxer. Mm-hmm. But when these people got together, did you know what you know now about the organization, or did you just see the criticism coming towards you?
You know, it was really bizarre because and initially all we got was really great support and people coming out saying, yes, I saw this too. Yes, this happened to me. And then a month or two in, we started to get all these crazy people with all these like conspiracies and everything. That we were anti-vax, that we're anti this, we're anti that, we're spreading misinformation. And we tracked it back to that Sassy NP guy on TikTok because mm-hmm. remember, the United Nations created Team Halo and gave them preferential treatment on TikTok where everyone's getting their information from. And all the followers started to attack me and my organization, you know, doing some absolutely crazed and deranged things that created safety concerns for me and my family in an attempt to stop me from talking about remdesivir, stopping me from talking about the COVID vaccine and stopping us from helping people, which were typically low-income people that needed help.
I want you to share what happened to your children, people showing up at your house.
So this guy named Tyler Cuck, who is a homosexual and part of like the LGBTQIA plus rainbow mafia. And he has like a whole bunch of like, once again, rainbow mafia followers. And they started attacking me on social media. They started searching up where I lived, where my children went to school at, you know, where my family was, where I worked and things like that. And they started sending letters in the mail to my home address of child pornography.
Well, let's be clear about that. This was because when they sent it through the mail, it wasn't exactly child pornography. It was cartoon. No,
it was, is it the Podesta guy, the Podesto guy? He has these horrible pictures of
Tony Podesta out of Washington, D.C., whose name surfaced in Pizzagate, and he has art in his home mm-hmm. in Washington, D.C. that some people think is suspect. So that what they did, from what you had shared with me before we did this interview, that they took pictures of Tony's art, mm-hmm. and then they put your children's pictures, their heads, on those pictures.
On the pictures of those sexually abused children, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
They sent pictures of like, they're like screenshots of these people's TikToks where my face is in it. And they're like commenting on it, saying that they're going to come kill me. They sent letters to my house, that they were going to rape my children and burn my house down. And can you not right now?
I'm going to be up there.
Okay. Thanks. My husband always like, he just thinks I just hang out in my office all day and just have fun all day.
Okay, so when they sent those threats to you, you didn't have any support with law enforcement at that point in time.
No, so the local and the local PD. Ultimately, I filed a police report, and in the police report, they labeled my nonprofit that helps minorities and low income people as a radical group. I run a radical group. Some of the other police officers, as I had to constantly call the police because somebody tried to break into my house or there's somebody lurking out in front of my house, they would do I think honestly it was unofficial, but they would round on my house a lot more since I was just several blocks from the police station. And then they would park down the street and keep an eye on my house. So they did try something that was within their control, but from a legal standpoint, they couldn't do anything because these people were, you know, stochastic terrorism. And it's just random people, mob mentality attacking you. So they have no idea who it is. And even the two instigators are in different states, so there's nothing they can do.
So it's like a flash mob. You speak out, and then they basically attack you on social media, but they also sent, you know, something through the mail. You told me, you shared one time you were getting some groceries out of your car, and a guy came up and he didn't quite introduce himself, but he basically knew who you were.
Yeah. And, you know, I live in a really small town in rural Nevada. So you have to drive 4 hours, like from any major airport to get to us. And we can always spot an outsider from a mile away. We're a mining community here. We can tell that you don't look like us and you don't drive vehicles like us and things like that. And he, you know, kept trying to come up to my driveway. And I'm like, I will take you out right now. Like, I'm a black belt. We will scuffle. We will grapple right now in the street. Get away from my house. You know, and I literally had just pulled up having gotten groceries. And I'm like, this is ridiculous. Why would you think it's okay to come to a woman's home and just stand out in front of her home?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's pretty brazen. It's very bold.
Yeah.
So what have you learned when you've gone through this experience and taken a deep dive into this investigation in terms of the funding and who they're, you know, the matrix of who these people are?
So we discovered that Team Halo was funded by the Rockefeller Foundation and the IKEA Foundation, as well as a defense contractor firm. I want to say it's BIO, B-I-O. But I can't remember at the moment. Since, outing this Team Halo group, they have since shut down. So we don't have the website to look at their financials. But that was who was on the website as having financially sponsored Team Halo. And that was just one organization. There's also the Public Good Project with Shots Heard Around the World. They're another ridiculous group that targeted me as well, because some of the members from Team Halo were in Shots Heard Around the World as well.
What are the profiles of the people that actually do this? Are these people that are they all in the medical field? Are they what they term social influencers? Mm-hmm. I mean, are they paid by these people? Did you ever figure that out, if they were actually paid by any of these groups?
So for Team Halo, that they all said they were volunteers, but we do know that all of them were part of the TikTok Creator Fund, where after you reach so many followers on your TikTok, that you could apply for the creator fund. And the more views, likes, clicks, and comments that you get, the more money you get from TikTok. So it was in their best interest to keep waving the red flag and fanning the flames to come after me, because I was a very good personal financial revenue source for them through TikTok.
So when you have shared this story with people on Capitol Hill, what are their reactions to this? Because you're not alone. I mean, they went after a lot of people. They went after the doctors and the nurses and anybody who spoke up.
Ultimately, there was no support at all from anyone. And it's just like, you had to tackle the problem yourself. So we know that the doctors were tackling it and managing it, and we were tackling it from our end, and you just have to take down one accuser at a time. And this is how I ended up working with a reporter named Katie Spence from the Epoch Times. She was the only one that would listen to us about what was going on. And I said, look, there's an entire organization dedicated to just attacking us and going after our licenses, whether we're nurses or doctors. They swarm the licensing board until they take our licenses, and they file hundreds and hundreds of complaints against us that you financially can't fight. It was actually like a system that they had. Mm-hmm. And it was—
Did they file a complaint with your nursing board?
Yes, they filed several because I told people ivermectin was safe and effective. What was another one? Like, I can't even remember. One was saying I falsified my credentials, and I'm like, you can literally go check my credentials like online. Like, I don't understand like what's going on.
So you were a target. That's the bottom line. You were a target. You had the experience, you had the background, you knew what you were doing, you challenged the system, you were public about it, you went on social media, and hence you didn't fit the narrative.
Yep. Ultimately, yeah.
So how did your nursing nursing board members react to this?
They ultimately, honestly, I don't think they knew what to do because this is not something that's ever happened before. So they sent Team Halo and these influencers sent thousands of people to swarm the Nevada State Board of Nursing, jammed up their phones, jammed up their emails, jammed up the faxes, filing complaints, you know, and attacking their social
media. And this is just for you. So thousands of complaints went in.
So it was just a constant attack. And every time they filed a complaint, it costed me $5,000 in legal fees to pay for it, to the point where I was like $30,000 in debt already, trying to fight to protect a license that I can't even use because I don't have the COVID vaccine. So it's like you were being taken down on multiple different, you had a battle on like multiple different fronts constantly. And
what happened at the end of the day?
At the end of the day, I surrendered my nursing license because it was the instigation that was causing the safety concern to my children. But I'm in the process of just reapplying for it again. It's all I have to do is just, I just have to reapply for it again and pay my reinstatement fees. And so I have a Utah nursing license as well. Absolutely no issues, mm-hmm. No issues, because that wasn't the focus that Team Halo put on. It was all about the Nevada State Board of Nursing. And it was just ridiculous. I'm like, it was insane.
So when this show airs, they're going to know about Utah and Nevada again.
They can know about Utah or Nevada all that they want. They file like what, I don't know what they're going to do anymore. I'm not stopping helping people.
I think there should be a criminal investigation. I honest to God think that people should be criminally investigated, because especially if they're being paid by people who are profit, whether they're an NGO or a pharmaceutical company, or you know, if it's a UN sponsored, does that mean that the money that the US government or any government gives to the UN, then you know, kids, these people incentivized financially to go after people. There's something wrong in our society when people who are outspoken and trying to hold governments and the, you know, health administrators around the world accountable, and then all of a sudden people like you are being attacked. I mean, if you see something wrong in a hospital, I would hope to God that somebody would speak up as you did. I mean, it's commendable that you did, and I'm sorry that you went through this. I mean, it's pretty scary just from an institutional point of view. And the fact that people think it's okay to do these flash mob, you know, desecrations of people's financial capabilities.
Mm-hmm. Honestly, remember when the pandemic started and the vaccine came out and it was gonna save the world? And, you know, all the
stuff. I never believed it. I never believed that narrative.
So they were emboldened to do this because anybody that didn't get it was endangering everyone's lives. And, you know, just shut up and get it or get out of society. You don't deserve groceries. You don't deserve a job. You don't deserve all this. So they were emboldened by all of this propaganda on the media and all the support for the vaccine when the rest of us are trusting what our eyes said. And not a single thing that I have said has been wrong. And there will never be an apology. There will never be, we're sorry. There will never be any, like, you know, compensation for what I've gone through. What I get to know at the end is that I did the right thing. I stood my ground. And my reward for that is post-traumatic stress disorder. So it's just,
well, letting bullies know and outing them is very important, Nicole, because most bullies underneath it all are cowards. And that's why we're doing this interview, because I want people to know that I think that there needs to be a full blown investigation of all these people that were coordinated to go after you and the doc and other nurses and doctors and anybody who spoke out. I think the coordinated effort. Now, we do know about, you know, what happened with Twitter and the quote unquote censorship, but it was really a partnership between pharma and big tech and the government. At the same time, we're not so aware yet, okay, about what happened at Facebook. So what you have is good information for TikTok and for what's happening behind the scenes at Facebook. And that's the value. What advice do you have for anybody who has gone through this, may go through it in the future?
You know, I always recommend that if people are coming across the situation to get in contact with us at American Frontline Nurses, because we have an entire division that helps you manage this. We have protocols on how to lock down your social media, how to protect your family, how to scrub your information from the internet, because they're using data brokers to find out where you live. They're using Google Images to reverse image search you and find out where you're at. So we have, having gone through this, we now learn from a cybersecurity standpoint how to protect yourself better. And so we can help you with that as well. So it's horrible that we have to do this, but it's necessary if you're going to stay in this fight.
How do people get in touch with you?
You can get a hold of us through our contact form on our website, which is AmericanFrontlineNurses.org. And you have to use the word American because America's.
You just froze up for a second. So repeat that.
So AmericanFrontlineNurses.com. Don't use America's because that goes to a scam website. Someone's scamming our URL. But you get a hold of the contact form. If you have any questions, need any help, that contact form is down at the bottom of our home webpage. And we get hundreds of those form submissions every day. Like, what do we do? Like, here's an example. I've got it open right here. What's the best treatment for shingles? I'm not vaccinated for shingles or COVID. And so, you know, we told them these are your options, you know, holistically, naturally, as well as pharmaceutically. Talk to your provider about it and watch out for these complications and things like that. And so people come to us for more things beyond just COVID and vaccine injured, too. We also have Ask an Advocate Telegram chat where they can get into our Telegram chat and ask questions. We also have a weekly Zoom called Ask an Advocate Zoom, and we help troubleshoot medical problems through there. Lots of services for people that need help. We provide a lot of direction, a lot of clarification. We prevent a lot of actual healthcare injury, I like to say, by being, you know, on the front line, still helping people.
So have you seen in the course of these last years when you set up your organization, have you seen an increase of people coming to you or a decrease?
You know, we were getting slammed initially just with COVID, because that was what was upheavaling healthcare at the time. Then as that moved from the actual COVID hospitalizations and ventilators, it went into people losing their jobs, losing their livelihood, poor quality health because you were getting discriminated from the COVID because you didn't have the COVID vaccine, then vaccine injury. And that now we get all sorts of just basic healthcare questions, as well as healthcare management questions, because people have absolutely no trust in public health or their providers or the hospital systems. And so they're always coming to us for clarification on what's being said to them in the hospital or clinical setting. And we're finding that there is a ridiculous amount of misinformation being spread in the hospital and clinical settings about multiple different topics, not just COVID anymore. So we handle everything in the healthcare gambit.
So you're walking testimony to the fact that the level of trust has been violated, decreased because of this whole experience of COVID, when in fact, having been on the inside of a hospital at the very beginning for COVID, you're one of those brave nurses who said, we're killing people on the ventilators.
Mm-hmm. I'd say that the standard of care in America has been lowered drastically, where honestly, I think you can get better care in Mexico now than you can in the United States.
Do you feel hopeful that this can ever bounce back? And do you think that there needs to be a larger conversation about the lies and the deceit?
I think there needs to be a larger official conversation about it. Because even though we're tackling it bit by bit, unless there's an official meeting and deviling out of the actual information that went down and people are held accountable, it's just going to just fall to the wayside. People are just going to move on with their lives.
So we need, and you know, I mentioned this to two people in 2020. I said, you know, but by the time this is over, we're going to have a truth and reconciliation, but it's not going to look like Bishop Tutu's down in South Africa. I think we really need to get to the bottom of this. And, you know, there are a lot of scandals that I've covered in my life as a journalist, but this is a tough one because a lot of people do not want to admit that the decisions and proclamations that they made led to the deaths and injuries of millions of people worldwide.
Mm-hmm. And if they had just, instead of following lockstep with protocols that kept coming down to them and just believed what they were seeing and what their patients were telling us, we could have saved a lot more lives.
It's an extraordinary story because it's not just what people did. It's what they didn't do, what we call acts of omission under certain circumstances. And the fact that they didn't bring in the right people. They didn't have the right protocols. They didn't have the right responses. They lied about safe and effective. They skewed they tried to keep hidden, and to date, they still have the vascular and the neurological injuries. I mean, the list is endless when you think, I mean, this is a major, major screw up. Nicole, let me ask you something. Do you see an increase in doctors and nurses now willing to say, like you, speak out and get involved and get in the fight?
You know, I actually see less and less support from doctors and nurses now because, like I said, everyone is going back to their normal lives. The pandemic is over. Their jobs are secure. They've got bills to pay. They've moved on. And I'm like, but the problem is still there.
Mm-hmm.
We still have to handle the problem. There still needs to be an investigation. We still need to do quality control from this. But people they just want to move on because it's easier to move on than it is to do the work of fixing things. And we see that all the time. Like volunteerism at my organization has drastically dropped down. People are just returning back to their post-pandemic lives now.
If that's even possible, because they haven't shut down the gain of function, which is part of the research that led to what happened in COVID.
Yeah, it's just easier to keep your head down, your mouth shut, and go about your day because it's not your responsibility to deal with gain of function. It's not your responsibility to deal with the mass deaths. And a constant thing that I hear all the time, too, is I'm just one person. What am I going to do? And I'm like, well, I was just one person, too, and look what I've done, mm-hmm. You know.
The power of one is contagious. That's why we have supported and interviewed the people who are brave enough to come out, who were many of whom were in the healthcare field in early 2021, who were COVID vaccinated injured. I mean, they knew it, and they're in the healthcare field, and many of them said to me on some of their really bad days, they didn't know whether the injury was worse than how they were treated by their colleagues who basically gaslit them and basically did not know how to treat them.
Yeah, and we had patients that were coming to us and telling us that when they went in for medical services, whether it be outpatient surgery, blood work, an ER visit, that they were getting treated poorly because they were not vaccinated. And it was just, I could not believe that people who took an oath to do no harm willfully discriminated against people and gave them poor quality care because of their own prejudices.
It's a pretty amazing story. Nicole, I want to thank you for coming on the show and being brave and courageous and speaking out about this and telling your story. And please come back to us anytime if, as a result of this interview, if these thugs, and that's what they are, they're thugs, if these flash mob thugs attack you again. I really appreciate you doing this interview. I think it's very enlightening for people because this isn't over.
No, it's not. We're still unraveling everything that's going on or everything that went on. And so we've only just touched the tip of the iceberg. I think that there's so much more to uncover, but people have to stay active and aware of it and not just bury their heads in the sand.
Again, Nicole, how do people get in touch with you?
You can get a hold of us via our social media, AmericanFrontlineNurses.com, our website, or you can follow me on social media, American or Nicole Sirotek. I also have a book coming out called Dark Influence. It's available on Amazon about the whole situation that I went through, kind of exposing Team Halo and shots heard around the world. And 100% of the profits from that book go back to American Frontline Nurses. So those are all the ways you can stay involved and keep in touch with us, and definitely reach out through the website if you need help.
Nicole Sirotek, thank you so much for sharing your story, and good luck, and let's keep in touch.
All right. Thank you so much. I appreciate the time.